Sometimes you experience that we make an attempt to try and be a little humble, and then you feel your pride rising again. So how do you?
The point is that the attempt is what's important, because the ability is Krishna. But the point is that the less we want it, then why it just doesn't come. So that attempt, because through attempt, then there is result. But to make the attempt, you have to have the interest. Right? So relationship will start with interest. You have the interest, then naturally you make the attempt, because you have a result that you're interested in. Right? You don't have a result you're interested in, then naturally there's not going to be, there's not going to be any endeavor. So endeavor is actually the most important thing. It's through endeavor that you're trying to, express a relationship. You know what I'm saying? One may have a relationship, but unless it's expressed, it just doesn't happen. So it's in the process of an activity that the relationship is expressed. Right? Otherwise it's unexpressed, because it's just thought, it's just felt, it's just experience. But when one endeavors, that's when then the relationship is actually understood. Because of what kind of endeavor, what kind of result you're trying to get. Now, a particular endeavor will get a particular result. Does that make sense? So that keeping that in mind, that this is what you want, and constantly trying to make that endeavor, then that's what's important. Right? Because results are up to Krishna anyway. Does that make sense? So, but since for us the results belong to Krishna, we want a good result for Krishna. Right. But for Krishna, then it's the endeavor that's important, because he is result. So there's not, for him, the result isn't actually the important thing. It's that endeavor, that interest that means. In other words, it's the moods and endeavor that are more important. Right? It means we function on the external platform, so observable results become more important for us. But for Krishna, it's not the observable results. It's actually the expression of the relationship, that endeavor, that need for the relationship. Does that make sense? So in other words, one just keeps trying. The proper performance of our duties, that will present ample opportunity for, humility, tolerance, not desiring any respect, or respecting all others, to come, to be able to try to remember Krishna. So it's not a separate exercise, that's different from the process. The process itself is the exercise. Does that make sense? So that's why austerity means the proper performance of your duty, whatever that may be. It doesn't matter. It means any duties are austerity. But the nice thing about it is that duties are in line with one's nature. One emotional and conditional. So one likes doing those. That's why one generally doesn't think of those things as austerity. But the point is because of the nature, the changing nature of material energy, even something you like has aspects that you may not like, or time, maybe aspects you like, but times that you don't like it. In other words, you have time, place, and circumstance. So you don't like it in this place, or this time, or in this circumstance. You know what I'm saying? So the all sides of it are there. So the austerity is something that you can do, not something that you can't do. So sometimes there's this idea that I should make it more tough, and if I take it where it's easy, that's the easy way, and I won't get it to the result. The material class, the harder you work, the harder. But here it's connection to Krishna that slightly different. So if we're depending upon ourselves, we want more talk, more this, then we feel we're more accomplished, more expert, we'll get a better result, you know, there's more to, you know, talk about, there's more to be proud of. You know, if something's just very simple, then, you know, you can't look at yourself and add good about it. But the basic thing is the simple things are also difficult in the element that they're simple, but you have to consistently apply them. That's where the difficulty comes, right? Because do something once, twice, that's easy enough, but to always do it. Always do it with quality, always do it with attention. That then that's where the austerity is. Does that make sense?
Specifically, since, for instance, on Sankirtan, when people don't want to help and don't want to give and are quite rude, then how do you tolerate that?
How do you tolerate it? Because you're doing it for someone else. You know, it's your own work, why should you tolerate it? But since it's someone else's work, you know, if you're out there making money for yourself, then why would you tolerate that? Unless there was some higher purpose, you know, by doing this, then you can take care of the family or some other attachments would be there that will motivate you and mature you. Because dealing with energy basically means you'll get insulted. It's just the meaning of it, especially if you want to be the controller of it. But in any case, it's being insulted. It's because the energy itself is easily insulted. Right? Because if it's easily insulted, naturally you'll be insulted. It's just the way dealing with energy is. Because the insult is anything that may appear to reduce its connection, its security, its identity. Right, you know, you have a beautiful woman, unless you tell her she's beautiful, then she's insulted, because that's her identity. That's how she feels she relates to people. That's why people relate to her. So if it's not recognized, you're not recognizing her. So therefore she's insulted. You know, does that make sense? So it's a drop in security, but because she's very proud of it, therefore it'll come up as anger. Right? If she's not confident of it, then it'll come out as more as directly as insecurity, you could see it. You know. So then in either way it's a problem. You know, you're going to have to be humble to deal with it. If they're angry, you have to be humble. If they're insecure, you have to be humble. So it's just that's the only method. So that humility is the only way you can actually deal. You know, so people aren't nice with that because they're worried. They're worried about who's lost. They're worried about being dealt with improperly and that. So if somehow or another you can be pleasant, you can be nice, you can be, you know, congenial or something that's attractive to whatever to local people, you know, what kind of qualities they basically appreciate. You know, pleasant, straightforward, or, you know, very, you know, humble or whatever is the quality like that. You know, outgoing, but, you know, easygoing, and, you know, then you have your best chance of dealing. But at the same time, as is the principle of dealing with energy, you have to be sensitive to the nature. You may start like that, but let's say the person is not feeling well. Immediately you have to be able to change that mood, you know. Immediately you have to be able to change, you know. Then you have a better shot. Because the point is that if you're dealing, you have to deal about them. If you're dealing about them and you accept that, okay, sometimes it'll be nice, sometimes it'll not be nice. That's the principle of begging, that element is that sometimes it'll be nice for you, sometimes it won't. That's why it generates humility. Because you just accept that that's the way it is. Some people will be nice, some people won't be nice, but you'll deal with it to try to, even if they're not nice, deal in such a way that they become nice. You know, at least if not nice, at least, you know, at a neutral position where they're willing to cooperate with whatever it is that you're trying to involve them in, you know, whatever activity you're trying to involve them in. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's just a matter of acceptance. That's the main thing, is that if you accept the thing for what it is, it doesn't bother you. Like, why did the dog trainer not get bothered by dogs?
Expects them to make mistakes.
They know what they are. They know what they'll do. They'll know that they do something and then the dog gets all excited and forgets that they're supposed to sit there and, you know, just be peaceful. Or, you know, just a nap or something agitates it and something they get all upset or, you know, they get hungry or they, you know, something they got, you know, so there's going to be, they just know what is the range of obstacles that are there in dealing with the dog. You know, and they know what they want to get done with the dog. So therefore, the obstacles don't bother them. They're simply things that you deal with. So the same way that people on the street, then there's going to be a whole plethora of ways that they'll react. And so you know that they're going to react in these ways because they're individuals. They have their own life. You know, it's not that they're upset with you. They're upset with life in general. And so therefore, you just happen to bump into them. And therefore, you get to experience their pain like that, you know. So, but it's not that it's you. It's not that they're such great all the time, and then when they saw you, then they became annoyed. No, you know, because so therefore, knowing that, then it won't bother you so much. So that's the main thing. That area. This is one of the eight ways we tell nature. That area that you aren't bothered by the obstacles of it, and you can still keep your focus on the goal and make the endeavor. Right? So that would be one. Yeah. And what in other words, yeah, and the other is another, it's just another perspective of what you're willing to take the risk in. You're willing to invest in this area, even though there's the possibility of loss, because there's possibility of loss in everything. And but you're willing to take that risk, and whatever that risk is, you'll find a way around it. In other words, it's just another view of obstacles. You say obstacles, you can say it's risk. You know, it's the same kind of thing. You know, it's just depends upon how you want to look at it. You know, economically, that risk management. You know, and if you're, you know, I say, you know, go get them. You know, you can do it. Then they talk about obstacles. You know, like that, or if they want to. You know, get you motivated because you're motivated. So that's them dealing once you're in passion. You know, if you're in ignorance, then they talk about responsibility, taking that responsibility, it's up to you, you know, like that. And, you know, it's something you don't want to deal with. So that's the, you know, the reluctance in that area. So then they kind of think they can take responsibility. Once you've taken responsibility, then depending on what it is, then it's obstacles, you know, or
challenges.
Obstacles, challenges makes it sound more nice. Risk, you know, this, ooh, but, you know, but the point is if you're not afraid of it, then, you know, it's like, at the point you could go up to them with a book, they could take it, they could not take it. So the risk is they not take it, you know. The risk is in not taking it, they could also not be nice. You know, if that's the risk, you can handle that, then it works for you. You can't handle that, you won't. So the challenge is getting them to take the book, the risk they won't take the book. You know, the obstacle is their move around it, that they're under reluctance or issues that they have, or, you know, so I guess it's just whether you're looking at, you know, which aspect you're looking at, so they give it a nice name, it makes it sound inspiring.
Maraj, yeah. Well, we have to develop our compassion for all living entities and also compassion for our fellow Vaishnavas. Say, for example, like in a Brahmacharya ashram situation where a lot of the members living in the ashram, they're sleeping in a lot, they're not attending hardly any of the program. Should we tolerate this, or should we ask them to move out of the ashram if they're going to be like that, or how to deal with them so we can rise them to the proper standard?
The point is that why does somebody do something?
Motivated?
Mm.
They're motivated? They have motivation?
Yeah, so therefore, if they're not following practices that you want, then that means they're not motivated. So, how do you motivate them? You know what I'm saying? You can use, immediate motivators like cold buckets of water, or, you know, yelling, screaming, lights, you know, pulling off bed sheets. I mean, these kind of things. But in the long term, then if that's how you want to behave day in, day out, then hey, great. But there's also the element of educating. So if they're educated, then they know why they have to do things. Then that's a matter of the Islamic sense. The other question is that's only half of your problem. You know, should they stay? I mean, in other words, you try to explain, you try to train, you try to teach, you try to support. If it still doesn't work, then you have the question of, okay, so they move out or they stay like this. But that's only half your problem. The real problem is, how did they get in the first place? You know what I'm saying? How is it that somebody who is not following would be allowed into the ashram? You know what I'm saying? One says that, no, but they came in very enthusiastic, but then why is it they're not now? What has changed? What is it about their nature that you didn't know about that therefore you're surprised? Does that make sense? You know, it's like they're not following, so that means they're not inspired, so that means there's not some support somewhere, so they're either doing services they don't like, they don't feel that camaraderie in working with others, or it's deeper, they need something that they think is a little bit more of a permanent comrade. You know? Does that make sense? Yeah. So this is the idea that one should have an understanding of these beforehand. You should actually know when people move into the ashram, which ones are going to remain brahmacharis for a longer period, which ones are in for shorter training that should get married. Right? Or even ones that should get married, but they have more of a responsible this and that, so therefore you deal with them, you know, they can get trained longer. But in other words, it's a plan. The point is when brahmacharya is explained, when grihastha life is explained, that makes it easier for one to be motivated. Because one knows the importance of the basis of brahmacharya training. That if I want to remain a brahmacharya, I have to have brahmacharya training. To be a strong devotee in devotional service, I need brahmacharya training. If I want to be a grihastha, I need brahmacharya training. So, you know, where is the lack of need of brahmacharya training? There's no place. So if they understand what it is, then, you know, so brahmacharya is a state of mind, a state of existence. Right? It's not just, you know, if you stay in the ashram, you do some certain duties and that's it. Does that make sense? So then it's a matter of, so mode of ignorance is not an element in Vedic culture. Right? You have something to work with when you're dealing with passion. Ideally trying to get it to goodness, but there's nothing to work with in ignorance. So it doesn't move. Only in movement can you direct. But if passion is going off in one direction, you can, you know, redirect it somewhere else. It's more valuable. Because there's movement. But when there's inertia, it's not going anywhere. You can't do anything with it. That's why you have to get moving. So either by philosophy, by a cold bucket of water, by, you know, they move out of the temple, then they have to get a job, they have to work because they have to pay rent. You know what I'm saying? In other words, lazy people should never move into the temple in the first place. They're already moving. Reluctantly, but they're moving. They have a job, they are paying their rent, they are having to take care of these things. To make it easier for them, you can find a house nearby and move 5 or 6 lazy guys into one house. Then it makes it easier for them. They have to pay less rent, so therefore they can spend a little bit more time at the temple. And when they're not interested, then you don't see them. So when you see them, they're doing work. And when they want to be lazy and sleep in and all that, then they're, you don't see them. You know what I'm saying? In other words, you have to use your brain knowing what they are and how to engage them. So it's not like just suddenly, how did we end up with this bunch of lazy noses? You know, it's like, you know, but you couldn't tell. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point. Leadership should be aware of, you know, what's active, what's inactive. You know, what kind of active? You know, is it more passion, more goodness? You know what I'm saying? What is their motive? What is their goals in life? What's their plans? Where do they want to go? You know what I'm saying? If a person can't figure out what he wants to do materially, it'll be very figured out materially, they were working at it, saw it's fruitless, and now they have no motive, you can then inspire them to Krishna consciousness. They can figure out goals and they can work for them. And they can distinguish that there's no value in the material. So therefore, you show them the spiritual, show them the goal, show them the process, they'll use it and see that it works, so they'll be very inspired. But someone who can't figure themselves out materially also can't figure themselves out spiritually. Right? So that's why education is so important. Right? And so those who can't figure themselves out, they should, you know, be in whatever their position they're in and try to figure it out from there and associate with the devotees as much as possible. Right? You get that. So but don't move into the temple and think that will make it any better. Understand? Yes. It can help stop it from happening. If it's like someone's going, let's say someone's going to be moved into the means. In other words, before you take up something, that is a very good time for preliminary training. Just like before the person moves into the temple, you make it very clear what the standards of the temple are and what are the results if you don't follow them. Like that. Then they're more likely to follow them. And if they don't follow them, you can remind them and it's, oh yeah, you know, rather than discussion or an argument. Before someone gets married, you can train them very nicely about marriage. Once they're married, generally somehow or another, they think they're the world's authority. You know, like that. So whatever you want before, like that. Or if the community, before they actually take up the responsibility in the community, they should already be trained what it means to be a community member, what is Krishna consciousness, this and that. Once they're in a, temple, once they're married, once they're leading the community, then it'll be harder for them. But if they've got that basic, you know, education, then you can continue the education. But if you start at that time, then unless they're very sincere or very submissive, it's very hard because their ego will get in the way. If their position, they identify with it, and by identifying with it, then if you say anything that they're not doing correct in that, then it actually undermines their own, their identity, not the real identity. You know, I'm a grihastha, you know, so therefore I'm great at it. And you say, well, you didn't do this right or that right. And then, you know, naturally, well, who are you to say, or this or that, or, you know, it's difficult. You know, it's like, I said, you know, the grihastas love to use on the sannyasis and leaders, let's say, the emperor has no clothes. Who said it? The kid? Right? Wasn't it the kid that pointed out the emperor has no clothes? So is he an emperor? Is he a manager? No, he's an observer. So therefore, then it's the same thing as that the emperor has no clothes. But then grihastas and sannyasis brahmacharis can say absolutely nothing about it because they have no idea of it because, you know, they can't observe anything. Really understand your own experience. So therefore, you know, you can't say anything, you know, given observation and stuff. You know, they have no authority in it, you know, because your hostile life is something unique and special that, you know, only someone in it can actually understand. No one else actually has any entrance into it because of the biggest idiot in the world. Right? But someone who actually understood your hostile life can understand the profound principles and anyone can understand it. You know what I'm saying? The specific experience you get from it, the intensity of that, that's something that they know that others won't know. But to know the principles on which it works, you know, to say you don't know, then that means all they're saying is you haven't experienced the intensity, therefore you don't know what you're talking about. But the principle of what you should be doing is still valid. But the point is, I'm so overwhelmed by the emotional experience that I can't even think about, use my intelligence and try to, you know, control the senses and my emotions because I'm just so overwhelmed. So because you don't understand that, you don't know what you're talking about. But what they're doing is completely sidelining and smoke screening the actual point that if they could control their senses and be beginning education is important. You know, basic, fundamental, you know, so that they can catch it, they can see how to use it in their life, but it should be education that's practically able to be applied. Because otherwise, the ego comes up and can't say anything. Before the guy starts to wash the pots, you can teach him how to wash them. You just throw them in there and wash the pots and figure out some system. Then when you come in and tell them, well, that's not right, then you get all upset. So education from the beginning cannot be underestimated. Right? Prabhupada, right from the beginning, he's educated. You know? He's got guy, LA temple, first temple, it's just a little apartment. He's living in there, one bathroom, and everybody else is living in there also. Right? They go to the temple for the programs, but Prabhupada's apartment basically is the ashram where it's happening. So all he's doing is educating. They're living there, going out, they have their jobs and everything, and do different things, and one's just taking care of her kid, and another one's, got their job, and someone else does this and that. So the problem is just educating. You know what I'm saying? So this idea, no, just do the service, don't worry about this education, that's all fluff, that's all intellectual stuff and this and that, that's great foolishness. Great foolishness. Because we're Brahmanical culture needs knowledge, needs education. Brahmins are known for their knowledge. Kshatriyas for their influence, Vaishyas for their money. Right? Shudras for their skill, their fame, their uniqueness in their presentation of their art, their expression. You know what I'm saying? So Brahmins are known for knowledge. So culture, the basis of the Vedic culture is knowledge. Therefore, everyone is basing their position on knowledge. You have influence because you have knowledge. You have wealth because you have knowledge. You're good at your art because you have knowledge. Does that make sense? So, if it's not knowledge-based, then you won't get a long-term result. And so, for those who have short-term results as their goal, great. But unfortunately, most claim they have long-term results, and they see the big temple and the big community and the big this and the big that, but the methods they use are so short-term. And then when people don't comply, then, it doesn't work, that is very insincere. Right? Like, if you notice when we're talking these devotional things, generally any question anyone has about it is always concerning someone else getting it together. Ever noticed? Practically most of, but very few are about the individual, how I can improve myself. It's always about, well, in the community they do like this, so how can we improve the community? But the point is, community made of individuals, what are you doing to make yourself actually a member of the community? That question never comes up because the individual is always perfect, it's always everyone else is at fault. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, then everyone else is at fault, they're not sincere. That's why my short-term, my endeavors are not getting me my long-term goals. Does that make sense? So it's generally not applied to self. Right? Self-realization, we banter it around like that, especially when we go to New Age and can use these terms very nicely, they relate to that. But is it ever applied to self? We're always so worried about the others. Right? Preaching, we have to be worried about others. But applying standards, we apply to ourselves. Right? In other words, we're encouraging others applying the standard to ourselves. If we can apply the standard to ourselves, we can help others see how to apply it to themselves. Charity begins at home, right? So that's a Vedic principle. You can't give more charity that will put your family in distress. Right? So according to the standards that they need to live out, this and that, then you judge your charity. that you have to start with yourself. That's what you should come to start. If you're always worried about everyone else, that's nice if it's actually you yourself are already developed. But generally the process is you worry about yourself, you worry about others. But it can't be you worry about others because you have false ego. It's okay in the beginning motive, but then the difficulty comes is that false ego will actually get in the way and nobody appreciates you are trying to help them. You know, in other words, if people don't appreciate what you're doing for them, then it's either they're in real, in other words, they're in real ignorance or you're not quite blind. Like to help, but you have to be able to help. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say, No, it's just I was thinking of example about, you know. Is that okay?
Maharaj, a number of us who live outside the temple may be caught up with so many different dealings in the world, and consequently we're not seen much at the temple, or we're not seen doing much service. But it seems like maybe there's a tendency amongst that full-time devotees are fully engaged to think, well, you know, they're initiated, they must be doing all right. But actually, you know, a lot of us outside, who are living outside the temple, we may be initiated, actually, we may be caught up in a lot of maya. So should the full-time devotees, like in the temple, should always be thinking, concerned about us devotees outside the temple and maybe trying to, you know, go and visit us in our homes sometimes? And
that's ideal.
Inspiring us.
That's ideal, but they have to be confident that that's what you want. Because as far as I remember, the community, you know, very much wanted the temple devotees to mind their own business. Right? Because they felt that they don't really know what's going on. I mean, that's the last I heard. I hear out of Chopati and a few people trying to follow kind of along that line, the community wants the temple, but then the point is the people in the temple are people who the community respects. You know what I'm saying? Then the community wants them to help. But if the people in the temple are the same as the people out of the temple, it's just the ones out of the temple that have to work, and the ones in the temple trying to do something enough not to get kicked out, then they don't necessarily want you to say anything. You know, so there has to be, so that's one aspect. The other aspect is if the temple devotees feel that they're superior, that's not going to work either. It also doesn't work because generally nowadays it's a little bit less. Previously, where the difficulty is coming from is basically everybody in the community was a temple devotee who thought they were better than those who lived outside the community, outside. So when they moved outside, they moved outside with that same ego. And now it's like, we're the honest ones and all that, you know, because I was in the temple and I was thinking about this and that, and I wasn't such a great brahmachari, so therefore no one in the temple is a great brahmachari. So actually to step up and now I'm honest and I'm actually being, you know, properly situated for hospice. So I'm real and they're all false. So you get that also. You know what I'm saying? Because you're moving in the circle that's here and a few Indians and others are coming forward. What about the other 300 devotees that are out there, that have been out there for the last 10, 15 years?
dirt so that we don't leave the temple?
What do we do so we don't leave the temple? We can try handcuffs, rope chain, you know, like that. So you want to give yourself a little space, you know, and then depending on that, like, you know, one of those elastic things or something. Or, like, I see at the park sometimes the dogs, they have to, they keep them short, but they can run off about 20 feet. So, you know, get out of the front place, they can't quite get out.
Stay in
Krishna consciousness. So that means if you don't live in the temple, you're not Krishna conscious. Is that what you're saying?
No.
No. So you have to very carefully word what it is you want to express.
How do we stay in the Krishna conscious movement?
How do you stay in the Krishna conscious movement? Okay. Basically, is good association. That's amazing. Those who are committed to the mission, then you associate with them, you develop the same mentality. That makes sense. So association is the most important thing. Does that make sense? Like if you notice, you know, this one person in one environment, everybody's involved in all particular kinds of activities, you know, so basically just standard brahmacharya, you know, sadhana and service and all those kind of things, and this one not system, right? Then when that person moved, shifted from that environment out of that into a community environment, they took up a different association, and then instead of it being, you know, the yajnas or puja or service or philosophy sadhu sangha is always the thing that is impressed. From there, everything else will come.
Maharaj, I heard a philosophy that Chaupati actually 60-20-20.
60-20-20.
Association. 60% with peers, 20% with juniors, and 20% with seniors. The philosophy being that 60% of peers keeps you, because a peer can tell you when you're doing something wrong. And an older devotee, you can always put on a good show. And the younger devotee, you can't pitch too much because you become proud. And so
it can, if it works as a general principle. Like that, but I've seen people who have become, you know, so powerful and all that, you know, dealt with, you know, like 95, and you know, split the rest up between the equals and the juniors. Those who spent time with Prabhupada and stuff like that, I mean, what they know, what they can do, what they did do, you don't see happen now. You just don't see it. You know, so it's a matter of that may be a general thing. Works, but the point is why do you have to be proud of being around seniors? If you take the junior position, you're the servant, why do you have to become proud? Why do you have to become? You might become a little complacent just because you spaced out, but it doesn't mean you have to become proud. You know, or you deal with juniors, it doesn't mean that you have to become also proud of running your own and stuff like that. So it depends very much on the individual and the training. So it should be that the principle is one is respectful towards seniors, one is has camaraderie with equals, and one is compassionate for juniors. So whatever situation you find yourself in, remember it's nice.
Yeah, the contradiction I thought was that we should aspire for older association over time. It's
not necessarily older, it's more advanced. It's more advanced, so you can even of peers, those who are more advanced or those who are more determined or more fixed in an area. It doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be. It means if you find someone in generalist, that's always good. But sometimes you find someone who very excels in one area, but not necessarily others. You know, they're great at kirtan, but they're a terror at prasad, or they're great at prasad, but you know they're not good at something else. So, you know, so someone has a great service attitude, someone honors prasad very nicely, someone chants in japa very wonderfully, someone else then. Is really absorbing kirtan, someone else with dedication to the deity, someone else in group distribution, someone else to, you know, talking and inspiring others or helping, and, you know, someone just the humility, and, you know what I'm saying? So in this way, you take advantage of whatever is there, wherever it is. You know what I'm saying? So if in their environment that works, then great. But it's, the point is if you're in that environment, that works nice. But not that environment, then that's one that may not work because this is just the way you are. You are with just senior devotees. You can't say, well, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to go off and look for peers. No, you're in the situation of being with senior devotees, so therefore be there. You know, so in other words, what comes up is you should take advantage of all three. Like that.
Sometimes when you associate with senior Vaishnavas, there doesn't seem to be much. Some of them doesn't seem to be much feedback in terms of like some of the older devotees. You can speak about philosophy and have an exchange, and then others it seems like they just tell you something and then walk off, and there doesn't seem to be much exchange. So is that just a personal?
Can it just be individual? Yeah. The point is that. It's just how they teach, what kind of teaching they do. The point is that they're giving you some instruction and walking off is because you're a member of the mission. So therefore, they as a member of the mission, you know, and that's their service, and then they're giving you something. But generally, especially those who are always moving, will tend to probably give just more instruction and walk off, if that's what they do. They come to your temple for some days or some weeks, and then move on to the next place. So they never actually cultivate anyone specific. That's why traditionally in the Vedic, I mean, you have those who have no place, and that's always glorious that they can do that. But you see a lot of times that the preachers or the sannyasis, the pre-prajapacharya, how then we're going to express and train people in the same thing, but because they're only there in a short amount of time, depending upon the individual and their capacity and all that, then they can take more or less of it or apply it in a greater or lesser degree. But there's one place where you can go and see what the quality of the students, what is the quality of what they talk about, you know, at least in the attempt for it. So then in that way, then they develop their teaching skills because they're dealing with the same people constantly. But if they don't have to speak, then, you know, then there may be the tendency just to give very terse instructions because that's all the more than they're anyway, so they have to get to the essence, or they don't deal with them on a very deep level, so they don't give very deep answers. So unless you inquire, then they might be them. In other words, if they give you some kind of terse instruction, then if you can contemplate that and then it's practical application and ask questions from that, then you might start to get deeper and then you might find them quite inspired, because generally most people don't ask. But I know when talking up from an ashram, you know, or even talking about relationships here and stuff like that, any of these kind of technical things, most of the time I'm discussing the importance of it, value of it, the usefulness of it, if you would use it, how things would go well for you. By not using it, that's where our problems lie, so many difficulties and stuff like that. And so, but it's actually not very often that you get questions, a little bit more in relation to the varnashram, when actually anybody asks a question, how to actually apply it. They might ask, well, how do we establish it in this context? It's something so broad, you know, they expect it, you know, a 2-minute answer, and then you, you know, establish for an option. But, very few ask how to apply. The place where the only place where I saw where it's just a national mentality was in Bohemia. Czechs, the Bohemians, because they're basically just, you know, heads that have feet on them. So I don't know what they look like now, but I know when I went there, when it was like 15 years ago, it's like, sing the song at the beginning of class, hardly anyone there, when you open your eyes, everybody is wearing a beret, has a goatee, you know, and is sitting around. Properly dressed and suavish at the same time, you know. And then you make a point. The question they ask is not on the next application, it's about 5 or 6 steps down the line. So you sometimes have to follow it back to figure out what they're talking about. You know. You know, it's like you said, you know, what should I introduce chanting into your life? Okay, I introduced the chanting, but okay, now do the loud chanting and a lot of people the same on the bus, what about in the family and things like that, not the work. Now that may be a problem there because then they tend to not find themselves in the work. So then, you know, that'll create then more problems with the family because then they fire you from the job, and so then they take it right on down. And so how do I deal with all these different applications of chanting, and how do I know which ones I do more obviously and which I don't? You know. So but other than there, so I would say that a lot of the preachers, one, from not necessarily having a seat, maybe that they're training people like that, they're more in management than teaching and education. Two, people don't ask questions. Three, if they ask questions, a lot of times then they're not actually to the point. They'll be political, they'll be economic, they'll be issues. You know, they're uncomfortable to deal with it. Like, does that make sense? You know, so it'll be a combination, but if one is sincere, one has questions, one asks them, and they're practical, they're valuable, you know, like Arjuna's asking questions, others will get benefit from that, then you probably find that they'd be very inspired and speak so much more. So. Yes. Just like doing what we're doing, it's very risky.
Srila Prabhupada was never very happy in the Western countries that we focus a lot of energy just on the preaching to the Indians, because generally it seems like the Indians aren't so inclined to preach to Western people. So, but if we really put a lot of energy into preaching to Western people, then they're the ones who spread it to other Western people. So I was just wondering, like, it seems a lot of our temples in the West, although, you know, all the Indian people, of course, know the spirit of souls, but in Indian bodies, they're generally very nice people. But it seems like, you know, at our programs, it's like 99% Indians, and there's some feeling amongst some devotees that a lot of Western people, they're not inclined to come along, because they come here maybe once and they think, well, it's just an Indian thing, it's just a Hindu thing, it's not for me, you know? So should we be thinking, well, if that's the case, should we try and open some other centre where we can just really concentrate on the Western people, and maybe, you know, leave the temple for the Indians?
Chinese don't like Indians either. So then they can have three centres.
Those aren't Hindus. Those are devotees. You walk into the
terrible. In Juhu or in Delhi, those are Hindus. You know, flag carrying, you know, waving, car carrying Hindus. I've never heard any, you know, whites say they had a problem, you know, associating and living in the chaupati environment. So the point is, if they're devotees, then it's there. So that means the preaching has to go beyond just they're Hindus, therefore this is, you know, Hindu culture, therefore as Hindus give money. That's the whole point. Why are there so many Hindus in our temples these days? Because they figured out that's where the money is. Right? Who owns all the motels in America?
The hotels,
okay. Okay, who's taken over the diamond market from the Jews in Antwerp? The Gujaratis. So the devotees have finally figured out, well, Indians aren't just a bunch of low-grade rickshaw wallahs and, you know, housemaids, you know, that they see, you know, from Vrindavan and Mayapur. They figured out these are the smartest people on the planet, and when it comes to, you know, material life, they got it better than anybody. Right? If you look who are the top, you know, five wealthiest people in the world, I think only one of them is white. And at least two of them, if not three of them, are Indians. And the others are other variety Asians. You know, or, you know, I think one's maybe Central or South America. It's like this. They're not, you know, the whites are behind. They've lost it. You know? They become complacent. So you have to be very, very careful. The point is, the common element amongst all people is, is culture. You establish a culture, that's why we talk so much on culture. Because you establish that, you have something common. Because everybody has a commonality in devotional service, but in a conditioned state, what's the commonality? So unless you create Vaishnava culture, where's the commonality? Because that is interesting. Because as far as, you know, whites go, they have to understand their minority. And they're getting more and more that way, right? And you have to look at facts. Whites don't procreate. Everybody else does. So it's just a matter of time before down at the local school here, the whites can apply for minority club status. In America, in Los Angeles, other places, that's only a fact. You know, like before, you have the Chinese club, you have the, you know, Spanish club, now you can have a, you know, a white boy club. There's only a few of them. Everybody in school speaks Spanish. You know, it's like, you know, it's interesting fact. America doesn't have an official language. Because just everybody spoke American. One time they discussed it, making it German, or this or that, because English was more common, it just was that way. But when you have, like, you know, Los Angeles speaks Spanish, Miami speaks Spanish, then they couldn't make the rule that they had to learn English in schools. Because there's no rule. You know, it was overlooked. You know, whites got problems. They're on the decline. One in four, you know, in New York City, that. So if you go out and stand on the street, what you see walking by, I don't see that many, it's not like overly whitish. You know, I look out the window upstairs, I see lots of Orientals, lots of Indians, and now and again some, you know, honkies on, you know, roping, you know, magazine. The boards with wheels on them. Skateboards, yeah, going by with the headphones. Or old white ladies going by. And stuff like this. One or two spunky white girls. But they're the minority. They're not the obvious majority. Like, you know, if you wanted to take this point very seriously, you should have been back there in the 60s lobbying to maintain white Australia. Because it's too late now. Too late now. So in other words, the real solution is the culture. That's what makes the commonality. That's what makes the, you know, what we used to, you know, what they call it, this, you know, we used to do the discon, you know, PR movies, you know, what were they called? Discon World.
Oh, it's come World Review.
No, not those ones. The bigger ones were more, not the small ones. It was all about society and different things happening. You know, so one of the famous ones is, you know, the United Nations of the Spiritual World, you know, like that. That's used to do an interview, you know, introduce everybody, you know, from this one to this country, that one from that country, you know, even if they're all from there. You know, stuff like that. You know, this one's, you know, great grandfather was Italian, so he's from Italy, you know. He's from Israel, you know, exactly. You know, this was from England, that was from that, and this was from New York, that was from Los Angeles. The point is, Indians don't have any problem with the Westerners. The Westerners have problems, that's their problem. You know, like that. How you get by that, I think it's just by the place is nice. The point is, the culture and everything. People respond to being dealt with nicely, you know, like that. So, a lot of these people that you want to catch, they go to yoga centers, and sometimes they're run by white people, and they have Indians come and run them, they're not upset that yoga is kind of an Indian thing, right? They, you know, a lot of the New Age comes from India, you know, so it's not so much in theory that they'll have problems with the Indian element. They'll have more of a difficulty if the culture is such that they can't find anything that they can identify with and apply in their life. Right? So the sophisticated Vaishnava culture, everybody can relate to. Like Prabhupada, anyone can relate to him. Because that's sophisticated Indian culture. So the point is that even the Indians can learn something about them. So your training in culture, you can upgrade everybody. Because even if you start a separate, you know, how you say, all white temple, you'll find that there'll be very few in it anyway. Because unless there's culture, they don't stay. The reason the Indians can come in a group, the reason the Indians can relate to each other as a group is because they have a culture. Maybe not so much as left of it, but you know, you're starting with a major culture, so even if you have just a portion of it, it's still good. I probably gave an example of, I'd say, Morahati Lakhak. The dead elephant is still worth a lakh of rupees. Because the bones are ivory. You know, the skeleton of the thing is valuable. You know, well, you know, you have 30 Indians here and they all converse with each other, interact with each other, they all have a good time, you bring 30 white boys, and they will not. You'll pick one or two that you can relate to and it will stick to that. They will not move very freely. So the problem is not it's Indian, the problem is white boys have no culture. Right? There's a long list, you know, it's also like white boys can't jump, you know, things like that. So white boys have no culture. Therefore, they can't relate to each other. Right? They can relate to the skateboard, they can relate to their iPod, you know, like that. They can be tough, they can be mean, you know, like that. You know, they can not shave under their armpits. You know, I mean, you know, they have their things that make them who they are. But more than that, you know, the guy in the Nike stocking hat, you know. You know what I'm saying? So, that's the identity. Well, the Indians, they like dealing with people. You know what I'm saying? Prestige items are part of the prestige things. They're not you. You have a Mercedes, you are not that Mercedes. The white boy is. The Indian says, oh, you have enough wealth to have a Mercedes, so you're well situated. You as a person are well situated. Right? The white boy is, I am this Ferrari. I am this Ducati monster. So, how do you relate to, that's the difficulty.
I guess one thing I was just trying to say was it seems like a lot of the Indian devotees, they have no problem like preaching to other Indian bodied people, but it seems like they have a little bit of a block towards preaching to Westerners, a little bit of fear.
It's really difficult. It's just like this. If you go down to the lowest end of town where police don't even bother going, and go down there on the street and start, going for it, and just hope you don't get your head blown off, and you be comfortable? No. So that's how the Indians see you. Little reality check there.
Okay.
Absolutely stripped of any kind of culture. No respect for your mother, no respect for your sisters, just chivalrous, just fighting with your brothers, who's superior, who's going to get what, like that, just dog eat dog. That's what they see. Why should they get involved? They don't know. The Westerners have this like hack system, They blow your head off, the temple commander rip you to shreds. Like that, and the next moment, then they're nice to you because, I had my temple commander hat on. I put my hat on, I don't have to follow any etiquette or any culture. I just get done what I gotta get done because I am who I am and what I'm doing is important. You wanna take part of it, then okay, you're not taking part of it. You're trash. You wanna deal with that? So that's called white man's culture. It's really a problem. Do you understand? You speak to Indians, it's like this. The Indian is over in Australia, so they're going to deal with the white guys. And an Indian walks into a shop, and the lady behind the counter is white. Treats that Indian like they're trash. So, people that treat you like that, how close do you want to get to them? You've gone to India, you've moved around India, so you haven't been treated like you're trash, something subhuman. So then, that's the reason the Indians are more comfortable amongst themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And stay away from the white kids. Because the white kids are animals. Sophisticated, civilized, the absolute degenerate animals. That's why I can talk myself blue about Vedic culture. And they just find as many ways as possible to reject it. Because they don't have culture, they like it that way. They're suffering like cats and dogs, they want to know the solution, but they will not take the medicine. They just want it to happen by magic. Just magic.
How do we give them the medicine without, so that they can take it? Is that true? Hari Nam saying its own massive prasadam distribution?
You have that, but the point is you follow the culture yourself, they're going to be attracted by the culture. Prabhupada followed it, then the devotee picked up on that. You walked into the temple, it was one of the most pleasant places you ever walked into. There was nothing in it. There was no furniture, nothing, but it was sparkling clean and the people were very nice and congenial. Spend the time, everybody's too busy making problems, doing their own thing. I can guarantee you, someone can walk in the front door of this place and not see anybody, and there'll be plenty of people in the temple. Right? Basically, they can take darshan here, or if they're going to buy some food or buy a book, then, or buy a chachka, then, we have interest. But if not, then we'll walk the philosophy and from that, who has time? So the point is, if you have culture, then people will be attracted. You don't have culture. They already don't have culture. What are they going to gain from us? They'll take our philosophy. Everybody will take our philosophy. It's like, you know, hands down, no one has better philosophy than we have. They know that. People know, you know, no one else can answer your question but the Hare Krishnas. People do it. But as far as culture, I don't think there's anybody that thinks we're in a place to come to. I don't think anybody knows that. They get more out of the born agains and stuff, you know, than they get out of us. It's just a cultural battle. Because, you know, no one wants to be controlled. I mean, most all cultures of the world, they want to, of course, they have the same problem. They're here because they want to be the controller and enjoyer, but they're willing to be controlled by relationships. They're willing to commit to them. They're willing to take the risk in them. Tell me what goes on. When they're young, there's the idea, you know, unless it's already been destroyed by broken families and abusive parents and, you know, other stuff like that. But otherwise, they have it. They generally lose it. And then after that, they don't have much. And even if you give it to them, they don't trust it's real. They're just so, you know, it's like the person was in a very devastating and bad, you know, situation, you know, some big crash, fire, well, you know, some very horrific. And they're out of it, they're safe, but they're still freaking out and they just can't believe it. That, you know, so they still see it happening even though it's not happening. Very hard to work with them. Very hard. Because culturally the ego thing can never be wrong because their ideals were smashed so they just do it on their own. And so they don't want to open up, they can't trust, they can't open. So therefore, if they're overwhelmed by an environment of it, then there's a tendency that they'll like it and they'll associate maybe with time and relax and then they'll be comfortable in it. But it has to be overwhelming. You know, it's always about themselves. Everybody else is perfect, then I can have that trust. Right? A leader falls down. We have hundreds of thousands of leaders. One falls down. Oh, I can't trust the leadership anymore. Right? For the Indians, one guy falls down, it happens. Right? The Asians, it happens. The South Americans, it happens. You know? But the white boys, oh, I can't trust them anymore. I'm exploited. He told me so many things, I did so many things, I was exploited. What do you mean? You're engaged in Krishna's service. He had personal problems, that's his problem. You understand? That's 300 I'm talking about. Right now, you have a community only because it's full of Asians. Otherwise, if it wasn't for the Asians, you wouldn't have hardly built this. I mean, last time I came here, there were 5 people in the temple, 300 outside, and they were not about to come here except on Jamaica. Now you have much more of a scene, and what is it made of? It's Asians, or third world. I don't really see any more crackers around. You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is the reason they're not coming is because you haven't figured out how to preach to them. You know what I'm saying? Just using our common methods that we would work before, didn't work on Indians. Indians had more culture, didn't work on them before. As they joined the Western culture and dropped their culture, then most Indians, you find, are about 50s, the older ones born in the 50s, 1950s Western culture, and the younger ones 60s, maybe 70s. Very few are actually up to date. So that's why your preaching works on them. But the whiteys have a whole different paradigm now. Not that you can't get through with any preacher in this cultures very successfully. But it's just not happening here since you're not doing it. You know what I'm saying? What is New Age made out of? It's made out of all these vacant things that devotees just say are mine. Right? Unless you can make money out of it. Then it's cool. Now, yajnas are cool because you make money out of it. Previously, yajnas were something training you, but why are you doing it? Right? Every day, I have some white devotee tell me, why are you doing yajnas? This is that, it's training you. Until they figured out that they could get tons of money from the Indians by doing yajnas, then I didn't hear anything. Then I said, oh, can you teach me how to do yajnas? That's the training you to stop. You know, as long as it's money, then, you know, Cracker is interested. You know? That's it. Money talks, nobody walks. You know, that's it. I'm not joking. Because we do yajnas every day. Every day there's people that are right in your face after the yajna. Isn't this, you know, something the trade of yuga? You know, it's kind of like, you know, hey, this is the deity worship yajna straight out of the Bhagavatam 11th canto, Arimbal. You know, no, that doesn't apply. You need to tell them that it's still trading yuga, and it's, you know, why are you doing this? Why are you doing something else that makes money? You know what I'm saying? Sankirtan for Indians means get to there, have a kirtan, and go out and harm. No, Sankirtan for white boys means cash. Just look at it. May sound harsh, it may be rough, but I don't think it can fall what we're saying. They are very generic, they're very broad. There are individuals who have different viewpoints, but the general category, I don't think you can fault it. Because what is like the considered like the epitome of the, you know, up-to-date, you know, happening Western white man? He's a business executive. He's a Vaishya. What does Vaishya mean? Money. You don't think of, you know, the political leader or things like that, or, you know, unless you're a greedy. You know, you don't think of the great intellectual, you know, the lecturer at the campus and all that. Or, you know, sometimes you may think of, you know, he wears, you know, high heels and, you know, sticks his tongue out about 7 inches or something like that and makes funny faces. You know, and he plays guitar. That's okay. You know, like that. But other than that, then it's the epitome, the up-to-date, the happening, the one that controls the world, is the business person. Right? So, therefore, that's where the white lie. Right? Indians still talk Mahabharata Ramayana. What's the center of that? Vaishnavas. Shakti. Duty, dharma. You know, a few Brahmins and sages thrown in. You know what I'm saying? Different. Orientals, they get all, you know, sentimental, then it goes back to their Taoists, their sages, their, you know, looking at the world in reality. You know, all the stuff we preach about, you know, character and culture, for them, that is their, that's all they got. They don't know about the Supreme and this and that. At least they talk that. You know, talk to them. To Spanish, it's all respect. You have respect, you know. You come into my house, you know, I dealt with you nicely, then you have to deal with me nicely. You know, they work on writing it. Manadena. That's their verse. You know, Amanita, that's another thing. But, you know, I respect you, you respect me. But, you know, but it's all respect, it's all people, it's all relationships. In other words, depending on where they are, except for probably, I think the Japanese, I think that their word for the white men is something low. You know, just because when they came to Japan, the sophistication of Japanese culture, the white men couldn't even compare to it. The dignity, this and that, you know, like that. So they have something there. But most other cultures, when they refer to the whites, it means someone who's outside the culture. You know, gringo doesn't mean that he's you know, something, you know, out of the gutter. Gringo, he doesn't know how to behave. You can't trust them. You don't know how they respond, how they react. One moment you're a friend, next moment they're your enemy, next moment they're, you can't tell how they're going to behave. You're dealing with a culture that has been so far disconnected from its roots for so long. All the other cultures of the world are more closely connected to their roots. You know, what are American roots? 200 years ago, everyone rode around on horses and then wore feathers in their hair. You know what I'm saying? So, where are the roots? Where's the root in England? Right? You got the Angles and Saxons, they're Germans. Right? The original people there, they're still complaining that the British are there. The English, excuse me. Like that. Because they're the foreigners. Right? The Celts, the Picts, the, you know, all those weirdos. Those were there, and they were falling close to the native culture. They were living in Europe, and all these madhouse Germans come in, you know, and they, you know, wipe them all out and take over. You know, so then, where's those madhouse Germans culture? That you don't seem to find much. You know, bearskins and battle axes, and that's about it.
Sure.
It doesn't go much beyond that. You know what I'm saying? So it's been so many millions of years since that connection is there. Where's the basis? So only your religion gives them some direction. You know, the Catholicism or something is in some direction. Otherwise, where's the direction? You know what I'm saying? Catholicism doesn't give them a culture. It gives them a few good qualities by which they supposedly could have one. But the problem is it's moved from Catholicism to Protestant. Protestant doesn't give you anything. So right there is that all the culture of Catholicism is thrown out. All the music, all the art, all the architecture, anything refined is thrown out. It's just you and God. Great for someone who's so absorbed and so religious that he doesn't have to worry about so much encumbrance and ritual. He'll just be absorbed in God. Great. But is that what's going on? So therefore, it's just me and my senses, me and what I want. You understand? The present white culture is a Protestant culture. Protestant economics. Protestant philosophy. There's no absolute, it's just whatever you feel. You ever notice that? You talk about, well, you know, yes, so then there's this big, yes, but I think, you know, that, you know, we all got to do this and that, and yeah, no, that's nice and that, but then, you know, you could refine that through that. No, but then I think that's what you do. Talk to everybody else in the world, you don't get that.
Gandhi was asked, what do you think of Western civilization? He said that'd be a nice idea.
Yeah, like that. So the whole point is don't try to separate the whites off as something, you know, it's, you know, important and special. Prabhupada wasn't, you say, wasn't interested in the Indians. How many were there in the 60s? The ones that were there basically were either ones that were so entrenched in Western thought from a long time before, or they were bogus gurus who were there coming to take advantage of the, you know, how you say, spiritual neophyteness of the Western environment. So why bother with them? But we noticed that he did spend 6 months of the year in India. Because the point is, you know, a convinced Indian can do a lot. Because for them it is their culture. Just like second generation, Krishna consciousness is their culture. Whether it's my father or not, that's another thing, but it is their culture. But first generation, then they're always having to fight with that. You know, it's my culture at the same time, you know, like the other night. How I find that, you know, the comics are much nicer and easier to deal with. You know what I'm saying? Second generation says the comics are crazy. They can make their own. Very few second generation go outside. Explode. Okay. Probably kind of stop anyway. But you understand? The point is there's no problem in cultivating the Indians. But the point is it's the same thing that cultivates Indians to make them the devotees, it's the same thing that's going to make anybody attracted and interested in being a devotee. You know what I'm saying? So that's not the problem. The problem is just that vision and that trying to satisfy everybody with that culture. You know what I'm saying? The philosophy in that we can easily satisfy. The difficulty we have is in the culture. Yes.
Well, sometimes if you, for instance, if the devotee's outside and we feel that maybe we can try and encourage them to do something for ISKCON. So some devotees say, well, you can spend a lot of time with these people and you have to put up with quite a lot of resentment or previous...
It is a big thing.
But then when you do spend the time, then they do very little anyway. So how do you...
The point is that you have to judge how much time you have, how much energy, how much facility you have, and put it where you're going to get the maximum result. You know what I'm saying? Because there's nothing stopping them from coming over and telling them. You know what I'm saying? The big gurus disappeared 22 years ago.
Yeah.
22 years. You can't move on. What can we do? You know what I'm saying? The guru coolies that had their difficulties, they're in their 30s now. You know what I'm saying? So where's this principle of just forgiveness and moving on? Like that. There's different people. Where are those people? Where are those, you know, guys, this one, this, and that one, that? Where are they? They're not around. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, if it's not going to be a great advantage, don't bother. It's not that you wouldn't want to, but it's just like, you spend the time, and if they don't want to do, you can't wake up a man that pretends to be a student. So you work with, you know, who's willing. You know, where did Prabhupada go in New York? He started off with the established people and this and that. Nice, but he saw that, you know, in other words, Prabhupada first started preaching at the yoga centers.
Yeah.
Right, so it's not that old. The new thing, it wasn't there when Prabhupada was here. What do you mean it wasn't there? Prabhupada started there. Then he moved down and he saw the young people were interested, so he started there. A little more wild, a little more crazy, but, you know, very enthusiastic. So in other words, you move where there's life. Where there's life, cultivate that. That life can then deal with everybody else. In other words, where there's a spark, fan it. So if the sparks are happening, you know, within the community, fan it, you know. Make the voting, they'll preach to everybody. You know, as they become confident amongst themselves, they'll be able to go out.
Yeah, I was just thinking, if you had a program where you had like big prasad and then had invited all these people to come. I'm just thinking the endeavor that you put in, you get a few. But
yeah, no, it's personal. It's by you come in contact, and if there's something nice, something is there to work with, then you work with it. But if there's not, then you leave it. The time's not right. Though if the time is right, then it'll happen. Like that. Not that the endeavor should be made, but still. If the time's not right, then the salt might not.
Well, I was Smoke Sharon once said that the biggest loss for our movement is that something like 90% of our devotees over the years have left this movement. So it seems like, you know, we have an ongoing attrition rate, which is quite large over the years.
Why did they leave? Is it the philosophy?
No,
it's the culture.
Yeah.
Every complaint anybody has on any level, even they try to claim it's spiritual, it's from the culture. Only the rhythmic thing that they kind of work a bit with philosophy, but their motive behind it is also cultural. They just don't want to be controlled.
So we can improve the dealing with most devotees.
I've talked about it. He's talking about all the culture programs, how much you have to put in the deity worship, the preaching, the cultural presentation. The problem with the cultural presentation was a big part of the mission. Nowadays, you don't even hear about it. There's cultures that, you know, stuff in yogurt, you know, the acid offals and all those guys.
You said
this is your best drum. Very easy.
It is mine. It is. The books have it.
I need to do a better job. This microphone here will not point at my mouth. I point at my mouth and it falls over. Clean. I went to Melbourne. It wasn't in, basically the furniture that's in there is stuff they don't want to put anywhere else, and then stuffed it into there. It's like double the amount of furniture that fits in that place. You know what I'm saying? Drawers are full of junk. God only knows which sannyasi left it, you know, how many eons. Books are missing. You know, it's just, you know what I'm saying? And then you go to every square inch of this place and say the same thing. You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is what is attractive? What's happening? That's the whole point. Make it attractive. Not attractive, why would it come? Right? You go to a yoga center, it's a little run down. No, you have to light up the day, clean, nice atmosphere, nice smell. Our temples before were so clean, all you smelled was incense, fresh meat, not the stuff that's been used so long it smells like fish. You know, every day in Melbourne I get the quiff of freshly fried, you know, fish quarters. Sometimes I felt it. And when you have so many arguments, you can't fry four quarters in this much heat. I don't have to keep a walk this much heat. And besides that, it won't be heat anyway. You know what I'm saying? So, like this, it's culture. So our philosophies remain the same, but where's the culture? In fact, we talk about it, you know, the fanatic, it doesn't apply, it's this, it's that, it's anything but useful. At the same time, they have no alternative. Zero, zip. We'll talk about something for a few days, a new book comes out, everyone's all, you know, happy about it, and this and that, it's working great for them, and then after another couple of years, no one's talking about it. A few years ago, all I ever heard every manager say is cubby, cubby this, cubby that, which quadrant, that quadrant. I don't hear any cubby anymore. Cubby's still there, still goes out and makes, you know, music. Because it didn't work, so they're moving on. But on what? So what Prabhupada gives us then, you know, it doesn't apply, you know, it's there. It was back in the 60s. No one worked on Krishna Prabhupada's, you know, 500 years ago. Yeah, 5,000 years ago. Today you still breathe, you still walk with your feet, you still, you know, use your fingers and pick your nose. What's changed? That's my challenge. Anyone who says it doesn't apply, I challenge what has changed. Only thing that's changed is consciousness. That's all. Oh, it's Kali Yuga. What does that mean? Consciousness changes, values change. Material energy still works the same. You still put your finger in the fire, you still get burnt. Right? It's Kali Yuga, it should burn you less, right? Nothing works so good. Sometimes you get burnt, sometimes you don't, you know. Sometimes you put your pot in the fire and it doesn't even heat up, you know, it's just, you know, it's Kali Yuga. Fire doesn't work anymore, you know. You know, I put my my water into my, you know, instant mashed potatoes, and they stay dry because the water just isn't moist anymore. It's Kali Yuga. You know what I'm saying? It's just all bluff. They have no culture. They don't want to learn culture. They don't want to be controlled by the culture, because that means taking responsibility, having relationships, committing yourself to relationships, and running the risk of getting hurt. Therefore, nirvishesh shunyavad paschastinejata, impersonalism and voidism. They don't want to be personal. You know, we're talking, they try to make it sound like it, we have nice flowery language, but push comes to shove, they're very institutional, and that's it. Not really careful. But why can't be Jewish? You know what I'm saying? You know, in other words, that's not actually the problem. Because the world is becoming more and more cosmopolitan. So this mix of cultures and this and that really doesn't carry as much weight. It still does in some communities, some areas, but in your main cities and things like that, it's getting less and less and less. So therefore, there's much more of a commonality and mix. The point is that the commonality is you're just modern consumer society. So if you can teach them a culture that goes beyond that, that actually satisfies their needs and everything, then that's what's going to actually pull everyone together. And no one's going to worry what that kind of
is. So Murray, if we have a choice between, like, say having a preaching centre downtown where there's a lot of, you know, white sort of Australian people, or, you know, a preaching centre out in the western suburbs where there's no Africans, Chinese, Lebanese, Muslims, Indians, we should think either situation is great.
The point is that why would you set up a centre if you don't have the preachers to run it? Why would you set up a centre if you don't have the people with the vision and enthusiasm to do something? You know what I'm saying? So if you have the people to run the centre downtown, you set up a centre downtown. If you have the people set it up on the west side, then you set it up on the west side. You know, if you have people for both, you do both. Probably like 20 temples in Delhi. You didn't think one temple would work. But you have 600 suburbs here in this city. You know, people aren't necessarily all going to be able to come here. So you have a main place where you do very nice worship, you do that, but you set up centers all over the city. And it works. So it's a matter of who you have people to preach to do those programs. That we can unlimitedly teach in unlimited ways, so it's just whatever works. It's not, well, should we do this or that? It's a matter of what can you do? If you're comfortable with that, you do that. Someone else comfortable with someone else, they do that, then you do that. So many things happen. It's all part of the mission. It's not that this is the only way or that's the only way. That's the difficulty. That's where the chivalry then breaks down. Before, it's like, you know, oh, you made, you know, 10 devotees at your temple, you know, we should try harder to preach at ours. Not, you know, we made 10 people at our temple, you're not making, so ours is the real preaching program, yours should be shut down and all the money from yours should be converted to ours. That's not the mission. The mission is to do something. Probably how many devotees in the beginning, how many centers? Right. There's two or three at this temple, and then there's five. Two of them go off and open another center in another place. You know, where were they? You know, one in LA, one in Santa Fe, New York, one in Montreal. I mean, these are, you know, wasn't that, you know, okay, oh, San Francisco. You know, it wasn't, okay, let's hit all the things, you know, LA, San Diego, Laguna Beach, you know, get all things, and then whatever. No, it's just wherever someone was interested. Why Santa Fe? Devotee there kind of, you know, knew something about the place or had some he had a contact where he could stay. He went to Santa Fe. Someone else knew someone in Montreal, so they went there. Someone else spoke German, they sent him to Germany to start a center. Right? Someone else spoke French, he went to France. So spoke English, it's under me. No, it was the London, not Northern. You stay on what you're saying. Start from London. They've been listening so much to Beatles records, they can understand the accents and that stuff. You understand? So it's where someone, that's the how my idea is. You preach to somebody according to their nature. You engage people according to their nature. You have that vision, understand nature, then when you see somebody with a nature, then you start that preaching aspect. You know what I'm saying? You have somebody who's academic, they start an academic program down at the university. You have someone who does other things and they preach there, you know. You know what I'm saying? So it's just wherever you can, you do house programs, you do community programs, you do school programs, you do campus programs, you do, you know, the yoga kind of programs, you do temple programs, you do whatever you can. So the bigger your community, the more things you can do.
Maharaj, isn't that a bit of an oversimplification on when you're talking
it
about
it? It is, but unless you start from there, that's where you go from. The point is the others make it so complicated, so much of an issue, that they can't even get out of their own shoebox. Simplification means it applies. What doesn't apply, what's illusion?
Well, broad generalizations of what ISKCON should do.
Broad generalizations, meaning engage people according to their inherent, their conditioned nature. That's a fundamental principle. That's a basic principle. That's why we have Brahmacharya by the Sri Brahmacharya Gosipanthasana. Yeah, if someone wants to get married, then he's married. Someone wants to be, you know, study and be celibate, then he does that. Someone wants to retire, he does that. Someone wants to do for physical activities, he does that. Someone wants to do business, he does that. How is that a oversimplification? That's fundamental principles.
It may be fundamental principles, but maybe the person speaking is motivated by bad experience within his life, and he's having a go at ISKCON because of his motive.
Why would we, I mean, what has gone bad in my life? I grew up with sannyasis. I had a great time. You know, I've never had, you could say, any improper dealings directly. No one has ever, to my face, dealt with me improperly. Never. I've never had it in my life. My parents never dealt badly. I've never had any authorities. I have full respect for authority. In fact, you would make comments about the GDC, I'll cut you to shreds. Behind that, people may say so many things, but you know, that's life. We're talking on issues that get in the way of devotees moving forward. If they're so generic that they go for so many devotees, then you know, they, you know, would seemingly affect us also. But the point is others who have been in the situation we're in, that we've been in, are they still doing the service they were doing? So, how is it affected? You know what I mean? Why would it be in person motivated? You know, it's like, if you preach the community here, what does it do for me and my service and my life? Nothing. Like that. I'm going to go on to when I'm there, be like it or not. I'm just sharing with you things that work for me over there. What makes it that I can stay doing the service that I've been doing. Like that. Despite having people that are, you know, like, definitely against the culture and all that, then we go on very happily doing this. When we bump into those people, then we're very pleasant and nice. The point is these things are established by Prabhupada wanted them. So maybe an oversimplification, but a vision, where does it start? Does it start with a big complex thing? No, the complex is practical application of it. But if there's no even vision or interest to even apply it, how can you talk detail? We don't talk detail because no one asks about detail. Like I said, I've talked about Monash for the last 25 years. Basically once or twice a year I get someone asking me about practical application. That's it. It just doesn't happen. It doesn't make sense. That's the point. talking and they're not listening, so I can't address them.
Yeah, the arguments are generally emotive, they're not based on philosophy,
Well, it would be very hard to say that what we're dealing with is not connected to philosophy, all that.
Some people feel that, well, that if the devotees had that experience within ISKCON, then sometimes they'll speak against ISKCON because they're emotive.
But we're not speaking against ISKCON. We're speaking against the devotee's lack of following the culture given by Srila Prabhupada. I don't think that would be considered to be a fault. I'm not talking about not following Prabhupada's instructions, that would be that's ISKCON.
No, it's not ISKCON.
So Prabhupada, given the Varnashram system, he was trying to establish, you know, as people that they answer about it, he says 50% of his work's not done in that Varnashram. So if you're talking on Varnashram, you're talking strongly, why is it in, you know, 25, 30 years, we can't establish it because devotees say it doesn't work, it doesn't this and that, so you talk on that. How is that personal issue? How is that, you know, you're just trying to inspire people.
Yeah, just some people feel that they don't agree, and then because they don't agree, they find fault with the speaker.
Yeah, of course. But the difficulty is they can't deal with it philosophically. So if there's a fault, you should be able to philosophically bring it out.
Yeah, the phrase is generally used is, I feel that he's like this.
Yeah, so that's the point, you feel. So that's okay, we don't mind that they feel, we don't even mind addressing